Welcome to Flip the Score. I'm Alex.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Josh.
And tonight we are going to talk about, oh wow, surprise, surprise, more layoffs. But most importantly, we are going to dive into some PlayStation Portal activity by Andrew and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And Andrew,
yes.
I think we're both very excited to hear you talk about this PlayStation Portal. So give me the
awesome
breakdown, man. Let me hear about this thing.
So I went to a local disc replay, and I was with a buddy who wanted to buy a Steam Deck. And so when we were there, I saw the Portal, and so I used my 20% off coupon, and I was like, fuck it, I'm going to buy the Portal. And just holding it, just the way it looks a lot nicer than what I thought it was going to. And holding it, I'm not exaggerating when I say that it is the best feeling handheld I've ever held.
Really?
It just feels perfect.
Does it feel better than... because I like the way the Vita felt. Does it feel better than a Vita?
Uh-huh. Ooh. Oh, absolutely. Because, if you like... it's two sides of a DualSense. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it just feels molded to your hand. Like, whereas the Vita felt good, but it was just like a handheld. It wasn't like molded to your hands.
Right.
And so, yeah, it feels good. Connected to your PlayStation is easy. You just go into your PS5 settings, turn on remote play, and then turn on your portal. I'm trying to remember. I think it just sends out a remote play signal. And I think my PS5 did, and since the portal is right there, it's just connected to it. And so as long as your PS5 is on standby, you turn a portal on, it'll automatically turn your PS5 on and connect to it via remote play. Your console has to be on a standby, or on. If it's on, it can obviously connect. It can't be just turned off fully, or else the portal won't turn on. So the first thing I tried playing was just Final Fantasy VII Rebirth on the portal, and it was running great. Now, I was sitting, like, literally, 5 feet away from my PS5, but then later I took it into my bedroom, which is on the other side of the house, and I was playing Rayman Legends, and it was great. There was no lag, no latency, no nothing. And you can even tell there's no latency when you have your TV on with your PS5 on it, and you have your portal right in front of it, and whenever you press a button, it like does the same thing both simultaneously on a TV and on your portal.
Oh, cool.
And then I went out to my patio, and I played the next day, went out there and sat next to my fire pit, and played just a couple levels of Rayman Legends again. Worked great. And then what's really cool about it is I can, so obviously there's no Bluetooth on it, but you can connect a pair of wired earbuds on it. Mm-hmm. And then you can connect a Discord on your PS5, and you can talk to your buddies through the microphone that's on the portal. Cause just like a DualSense controller, it has a microphone on it. So you can talk to your friends through that, and then their voices come through your earbuds.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yep, so while you're playing the game. And then last night, for about an hour before I fell asleep, I was just laying in bed playing some Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Sweet.
And I was like, huh, this might be a good Portal game. And it was perfect. I had no complaints, no latency, no nothing. So I'm blown away at this. And then I'm going over to Josh's on Saturday, and so I'll bring it over with me, and I'll test it over there and see how that works. So,
sweet. I'm excited to hear how that works out.
Yeah. You guys have any questions? I will say before I open up this forum to any questions, the screen looks incredible. It's much better than I thought it was going to be. It's an 8-inch screen, so it's bigger than the Steam Deck, bigger than the Switch. And it's a 1080p screen, which is better than both the Switch and the Steam Deck. And the colors on it look really good. It gets really bright. So I'm very happy with it.
Josh, do you have any questions?
Any questions?
Josh?
Not really, because I mean, since I do remote play on my Steam Deck, it's a very similar functionality. So I mean, when I do PlayStation Remote Play on my Steam Deck, there's like no latency at all. So, but I mean, it is really cool, the PlayStation Portal, because it does. Honestly, the biggest functionality it can do that the Steam Deck doesn't is that you can take your Steam Deck. I mean, I'm sorry, you can take the PlayStation Portal to a Wi-Fi that's not at your home, and as long as it has a good Wi-Fi connection, you can remote play anywhere outside your home.
Theoretically.
So, yeah, theoretically, as long as the connection is good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the biggest. As far as I can tell, the biggest difference between doing a remote play on the Steam Deck and remote play on the PlayStation Portal.
Well, that and the, I think the Discord functionality. Like, you can like, you can get Discord on a Steam Deck, but it's a separate app that you have to open up, and you would have to connect a Bluetooth headset that has a mic on it to the Steam Deck to be able to talk to anyone. So, but yeah, I'm quite happy with it.
Nope, I'm glad.
Yeah. I was anticipating more questions.
No, you answered a lot of it. I'm just excited to see how it works outside of your Wi-Fi and outside of the range of the PlayStation to see how it runs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that'll be pretty cool.
I'm wondering what else they're gonna do, if they're gonna do anything else with the portal. As in, I wonder if they're gonna release any, like, you know, different colors or like special editions. I doubt it. Although I could see them maybe releasing like a red one or a blue one or something, but I don't know. I honestly didn't even care if it worked or not. I mainly just wanted it for my collection. So it working is just a plus to me.
Hell yeah. I'm glad.
So, yeah.
So, Josh, we have been playing Final Fantasy. What have you been playing?
Yes. Unfortunately, Josh has not been playing it because he's not one of cool kids.
Yeah. Josh?
Yeah.
Okay. What have you been playing? I thought he disconnected, so I was like, "Wait, was he not here?"
Sorry, I'm distracted right now because I'm talking to Trisha about something.
Oh no, you're good. You're good. Then, dear, let's you and I just talk about Final Fantasy. You come back when you're ready. Okay, Andrew, how many hours do you have in the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth?
About 10 right now.
10. Okay. Yeah. Are you still in the Grasslands?
No, I am on chapter. I'm on chapter 3 right now, which went into the mines.
And that gets you in the chapter.
So unless
I'm on chapter 4, but I'm also like...
Okay, so I don't know if you go back to the grasslands at all.
You can
I assume you... Yeah, I'm going to say, I assume you do, because a lot of stuff there that you can unlock, so I would be surprised if it didn't let you back there.
You need to get the chocobo, and then after the chocobo, you need to help the guy put the cart together. And the cart then gets you from that chocobo farm to the other chocobo farm in the grasslands, and that's how you get between the two without going through mines again.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I have played about 15 hours. I have finished everything in the grasslands. I am halfway of finishing everything in Junon. And I see a lot of different games meshed into the open world of this game. I see the Zelda inspirations. I see the Ghost of Tsushima inspirations. I see the random Final Fantasy things like the Moogles, like the Moogle Mushroom minigame thing. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fun. But the one thing I think this game has nailed and everyone keeps talking about is this game called Queen's Blood.
Yeah.
I fucking adore this game. I am awful at it, but I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, I have done all the I did all the Queen's Blood missions in the first town area
too.
I've done it's fun. I do think it's a little too simple, though, because the fact that...
It isn't once you get to Junon, because then they have a lot different card structures of, like, negating cards, gaining more things. Yeah, let's, that one, the ones when I got to Junon, I was like, okay, these are actual, like, strategical
games. I think, though, the fact that it lets you go first every time means that as long as you know what you're doing, there's no way you can lose. Because you go first every time. So, I mean, obviously there's a learning curve to figure out exactly what's going on, especially when you get to the other towns and stuff. I think there, if there was a coin flip to where, like, maybe the enemy gets to go first, I think it would make it harder and maybe more challenging. And I'm wondering if it opens up later and adds more rows, because there's cards that you get that clearly have, like, five rows on the card.
You know what? I've noticed that.
But then there's only three rows when you're playing.
Has this, like, large square, and some of them seem like they're not hitting each row. So that's
Because what I mean is, like, there's some cards we get where there, it has, like, orange square, normal square, orange square, normal square, orange square. And it's like there's, it shows, like, oh, there should be five rows here, but you only have three. So I'm wondering if maybe later in the game it expands into five rows. I'm not sure.
That would that'd be interesting if it did.
Yeah. But then talking about, like, the games, you know, mixed together, I agree that this game, it feels like there's a lot of different games mixed together, and that's not necessarily a good thing. So what I mean by that is, when you're in an open world, I personally think that the way that Cloud climbs stuff is so slow.
Oh, it's very slow. Very, very janky, very slow, very annoying.
Exactly. It's like it was a climbing animation for a single player linear game that it just threw into an open world game. And also the way Cloud kind of, like, when you jump off of, like, ledges, like, down below you, like, your little cliffs or whatever, it's very inconsistent on what you can jump off of and what you can't.
That is the one thing I've noticed, is a lot of the climbing and stuff is not, there's not a lot of climbing expirationally like that.
Sometimes some
of the icons seem like they're hard to get on the map, but then you realize that there's areas you have to go into, like find this door over here and other things.
It just seems like they took the exploration of one game and tried to shove it into a different game that should have a different style of movement exploration in it.
Yeah.
Those don't always mesh with each other to where it's sometimes it's confusing or it's like it's frustrating. I think the battle system's a lot better this time compared to Remake. It's definitely more fleshed out, you know, a lot more stuff to upgrade. And obviously the characters are pretty cool. I love, like, the POV camera that goes on Cloud sometimes, and it'll just have, like, Aerith and Tifa just get up in his face. Like, I love when they got to the swamp and they saw a sign for the chocobos and they both got up, like, in your face, and they were like, "Can we buy a chocobo, please?" And Cloud just being his, like, really weird self was like, "Oh, yeah, sure. Like, whatever." Like, yeah, it's fun so far.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying a lot of the story. It's very fucking weird. Mm-hmm. It's very, like, strange. They just don't give a shit that these black hooded men are just walking around and no one cares that they're just getting picked off by giant fucking eagles. And people are just like,
yeah, it is weird. It's like
what the hell is going on? It's so fucking weird, man.
Like, it's someone so will strange. See one of those robe characters and then someone will be like, "Who's that?" And it was like, whatever, it's just one of those guys. It's like, what do you mean it's just one of those guys? I don't know.
It's weird. Weird, but I really like it.
Have you gotten to any of the other mini games yet?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, like, just like Queen's Blood. Like, Queen's Blood is a mini game, but there's tons. There's over 15 of these, like, mini games in this game, you know, and, like, the Chocobo Racing is one of them.
Did you say something? No, I have not. I have not seen any of that.
Yeah.
I've done all of the points of interest on the Grasslands, a lot in general.
Well, I mean, they're probably just deeper in the game because it's a really long game.
Okay, yeah,
yeah, like, there's a, I guess later in the game when you dress as a soldier, there's a mini game of you standing there like in rotation, and you have to like move your rifle to like certain spots, and there's a mini game for that. But yeah, there's apparently a bunch of them like later in the game. One of the funniest fucking pictures I have seen is Red 13 riding a chocobo.
It's so goddamn funny.
It is so stupid. And listen, I get it. Like, they said that like chocobos are like the fastest creature out there. And so it makes sense that Red 13 wouldn't be fast enough on his own to keep up with them. But it's just so funny seeing a four-legged creature who just runs on all fours riding a chocobo like a human.
It makes me laugh so goddamn
yes.
much. And it's just
but those are the parts about this game that I wish that funny stuff was in Final Fantasy 16 like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because 16 was so serious when this one just like is like just super funny and stuff.
I like it. I think it hits a lot of good things. Sometimes when you fail a quest, you don't notice that you have to hold triangle to restart it. So that's taking me a couple of tries to do things.
Huh.
And I'm just haven't really noticed. That's just on me. But yeah, I love it. I really, really enjoy it. I'm going to keep playing a lot of it. I'm going to do a couple
have
more.
Have you run into any new squad mates yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I still have to go. I have to go into that big part of Junon. I haven't done that yet.
Okay, because obviously later you get like you get Yuffie, mm-hmm. And I think you get Kate Sith, and the giant like fucking white.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Thing that he rides on. I don't remember. I don't even know what that is. And then there's a couple others I think you get. I'm interested to see. So do you play on the graphics mode or the performance mode?
Performance mode all day long.
Oh, really? Okay. I actually do play on the graphics mode because I try performance, but I think the game is so blurry. Just makes the game just look really blurry. So I switch because... I mean, I played Final Fantasy 16 in graphics at 30 FPS, so I was like, whatever, I can do this one at 30 also. So, it's not that bad. Yeah. Anything else you've been playing, or anything else you got to say about Final Fantasy?
Well, so have I done anything else? No, that's really all I have. All I really have been playing is just Final Fantasy.
Okay. So for me, right like 2 days before Rebirth came out, I finally beat Death Stranding.
Ooh, hell yeah.
How'd that go? And it was really good. Yeah. It came in at 51 hours is what I put into it. And definitely like really pissed at myself for not playing it before or not like actually getting into it before because it's so good. Definitely looking forward to the second one now. Kojima is so good at making you care for these characters and just like giving you like really like emotional plot beats at the end to like really make you feel for these characters. Like, there's the part at the end, which I really wish I could tell you about, but I know that you were playing it also, so I don't want to spoil it for you. It was just so, like, heartbreaking.
Yeah.
The thing that Sam had to do at, like, the end. But the story actually, like, wraps up at the end and actually answers, like, most of the questions that you have.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that there's still some questions about the BTs that maybe are answered, or if they were answered, I just didn't understand it. And maybe the second game will go more into it.
Okay.
But yeah, I think I pretty much understood most of the story by the end of it. So, and who Sam is, and who his sister is, and who Troy Baker's character is, and all this. So, and who Mads Mikkelsen's character is, like how they all like intertwine with each other. So, it's a really good game. I'm really happy I played it.
I'm glad because once Final Fantasy's done, probably gonna try to. You know, take more chunks at Death Stranding because I did have a fun time.
Yeah,
it's boring, but it's boring like gameplay wise. But I know it gets a little better, and the story is just extremely fucking interesting. So I want to see the story through because I think that story is like super cool, and it's written in a way that kind of makes me just enjoy it for what it is because you don't really get these like odd. Stories like these, except by guys like Hideo. So,
and like I said, once you start fighting the mules a lot more and getting weapons, the game like gets a lot more engaging. Once you can actually start like fighting the BTs, like once you can actually start like attacking them, later in the game you get like a new cufflink that is like dipped in Sam's blood, to where like if you're next to a BT, like holding your breath. You can actually cut their umbilical cord and like send them back to the other side or whatever. So yeah, once you get all that stuff, it starts getting like a lot more engaging, a lot more fun. So
sweet.
That's good enough. Yeah.
Is it possible to beat the game with barely like engaging in combat at all?
Yeah. Yeah. You can definitely do that. Okay.
Because I know in a Sacred Symbols podcast, I remember Colin Moriarty saying that he beat the game, and you said that he barely remembers combat at all, and you say he doesn't know.
I think what he said was that he didn't kill anyone, which okay. I can say that I didn't kill anyone either, because you specifically do not want to kill the mules, because if you do, then it can cause a void out. Which is basically their body will necrotize and they turn into BTs, but their body explodes and leaves a giant crater, which is what happens at the beginning with Sam.
Yeah, with that one dude, right? With that one guy.
Because he got killed. So basically, so I never killed.
Kind of pulled me into the game. It was just how weird that part was. Like, oh, bodies that die just blow up. Yeah, this is awesome.
Yep. And yeah, so I never killed any mules or whatever. So you basically just like you stealth through their areas and you get weapons that like you can subdue them, like you can tie them up in ropes, and it's very Metal Gear. Like if you sneak up behind them, you have this like this unlimited like strand of rope on you. How it's unlimited, I have no fucking idea. But you basically just like you sneak up behind them and you just like tie them up in this rope and that like subdues them. Or you have
it's what? Magic rope. He's got Hermione Granger's bag, and he's this is endless rope he's pulling out of it.
And then you get the weapons that can shoot like ropes at people. You get like assault rifles and shotguns that shoot like rounds that don't kill, so like rubber rounds or like bean bags or whatever. But you also get the, if you want to kill people, you do get actual guns if you wanted to. And what it means is that if you don't want a void out and the people leave a huge crater, after you kill them, you have to like transport their bodies to an incinerator. And but I never had to do that. So
is there anybody in the game that you can kill that would not explode?
I don't think so. I mean, because it's okay. anyone you can attack, it's like all NPCs.
Well, like, I didn't know if like in the game world, if there's people who like if they were to die, that they like they're immune to that, that they wouldn't fucking explode.
Like Sam, like he would explode, but the difference between him is he can repatriate himself, and even though he explodes and he comes back. There's only one other character story-wise that obviously I won't say who they are, that if they die, they don't necrotize. So, and that is involved with the story that you find out later in the game. But other than that character, I think, anyone that dies would necrotize and become a BT and explode. So,
Andrew, have you watched the newest episode of Kinda Feudie on the Kinda Funny's channel?
Did it come out today?
No, it came out like a week ago.
Oh yeah, I watched that one then. Yeah,
it was one that had like the special guests. It was Andrea Renee and
Tim
Schafer. And so when they the question was name a popular walking simulator, and Death Stranding was the third most popular answer.
Yeah, Andrea, do you agree with that? No, I do not agree with that. I mean, technically, you do walk a lot in the game. I get that. But in the spirit of the question, a walking simulator would be something like Gone Home. Yeah. And that is definitely not what Death Stranding is. And just questions about, like, any question you have about, like, the bridge baby that you have. And I shouldn't say that they're all answered. There is stuff, I guess, about the bridge baby that'll be answered in specifically the one that Sam carries that'll be answered in the second game. But there's, I mean, any questions you have about other characters, most of them get answered by the end of the game. So it's very good. And then other than that, I have not been playing anything else. So, okay. Actually, that's not true. I have been playing a little bit of Super Mario Galaxy on the Switch, just like if I bring my Switch to work and there's like downtime or stuff like that. But yeah, that's it.
Okay, Josh, what have you been playing?
I have not been playing a whole lot. There's been a lot of stuff been doing in my house, a lot of DIY stuff. I just haven't had a whole lot of time to play games. I did scratch a couple things off my PlayStation 3 bucket list. I got the platinum for the Dragon Ball Z Budokai HD collection on the PS3. That comprises the original Dragon Ball Z Budokai and then the third Budokai game. The second one was not in the collection. And it was a really fun game to play in them. Took about 12 hours of total playtime. And the first Budokai game, you can actually get all the trophies in like less than 2 hours in it. And then the rest of the time is just playing through the third game and getting all the trophies in that. So, and then another game I scratched off my bucket list was I finished my playthrough of Spec Ops: The Line on PS3, and it's a really good cerebral just crazy game. It does a lot of like. It does a lot of stuff in, like, the military genre and makes you think about, like, the atrocities of war and stuff. And but at the end of the day, it's the main character in the game. His name is Walker. He's gone insane. And it's not until at the very end of the game that it's revealed that the main enemy of the game is this, allegedly, this former general gone rogue named Conrad that your squad is going after, but only Walker can hear Conrad talking. Like whenever Walker talks into his microphone and he's allegedly talking to Conrad, he's talking on his microphone and his squad mates are looking at him like, who the fuck is he talking to? But they're following their squad leader because they're following orders. When Walker tells his two squad mates, shoot and kill these people, they do it because they follow orders. They don't question it. But then, later on in the game, they start questioning, like, why are we doing this? What are we doing here? Like, so it's definitely, like, it makes you question, like, you know, like, people in the military, like, they should definitely ask questions if they think something is going on, if something is weird. But the game has four different endings, depending on what you do. And two of the endings are like they're just easy to get. One is your character ends up realizing what he's done and he shoots himself in the head. Another one is his enemy Conrad shoots him in the head, but it's kind of like the same thing. It's Walker is shooting himself in the head because he's imagining Conrad is shooting him in the head.
Conrad isn't a real person.
No, you find out at the end because Walker finally gets to where Conrad is, and Conrad is actually sitting in a chair, dead, rotting, because he actually shot himself in the head and killed himself.
Oh, wow.
And so he was never actually alive, and he was never actually talking to Walker. Walker was just imagining it. Ooh. And then the two other cool endings are you can choose to quote-unquote shoot Conrad, which is you're kind of shattering the illusion of what's going on. And so Walker survives. And so there's an epilogue kind of mission, because the very last mission of the game doesn't actually have any combat. But then there's an epilogue to where everything is said and done, and you're standing in front of this building. And this is in Dubai, by the way, so it's desert everywhere. And some military troops, U.S. military troops, get there because they're trying to figure out what's going on. And they come up to Walker, and they're in. One of them's like, he's got a gun. And the other guy is like, he's shell-shocked. Just give him a second. You can either choose to lay down your gun, and then if you do that, then the military takes you, they drive you away, and then they're trying to debrief you to find out what happened. Mm. Or you can attack them. If you die while attacking them, the game ends with you laying on the ground, choking on your own blood, and Conrad comes back into your brain, telling you pretty much like nobody gets out of here alive. Or if you defeat all the U.S. soldiers, then the ending, this is actually my favorite ending. At the very beginning of the game, Walker thinks he hears Conrad say to them, he thinks he hears Conrad say to him, "Gentlemen, welcome to Dubai," at the very beginning of the game. And so at the ending, if you defeat all the soldiers, you take one of their walkie-talkies, you kind of go up to the top of this hill, and you see a bunch of like U.S. other like U.S. soldiers and stuff in the distance far away. Walker goes on his radio and goes, "Gentlemen, welcome to Dubai." Like he's starting the cycle all over again.
Huh.
So.
Interesting.
But yeah, it was a very interesting game. Toward the end of it, it was getting a little frustrating because they're throwing like a bunch of like really tough bullet sponge enemies at you. And I was just playing on normal, but I was dying a lot. And I was like, God yeah. damn it. I just want to finish this.
Hmm.
But I wishly would have kept going and made more games, but I mean, it's weird because Spec Ops before The Line was like a realistic military sim, not too much different from like SOCOM or Rainbow Six, and then they completely changed it for Spec Ops The Line and they made it like a third person, like almost like action game.
Yeah.
So.
Nice. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just gonna ask, was there any other PS3 games you have on your like list that you're gonna try and platinum anytime soon?
Not really. I mean there's games I wanna play in it, but I gotta look through because I wanted to play that game that Don't Not Game Remember Me. I've wanted to try playing that, so okay. That might be something I try next.
Okay, cool.
So, because every time I look at the shelf, it's like, "Hey, remember me?"
Ha ha.
And then the only other thing I did, not something I played, but I went and saw Dune 2. So.
Fuck yeah!
Nice. How was that?
It was really good. Have both of you seen the first Dune?
I watched about the first half hour of the first one and fell asleep.
About an hour of the first one, and then I also fell asleep.
Okay.
I just chose to watch it at nighttime when I probably shouldn't be.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I love the sequel. I also love the first one. and like it was just an amazing movie. I was just pumped watching it the whole time. The thing is that it's one of those movies where you really got to pay attention to what's going on, because if you don't pay attention, you're going to lose the plot and then you're not going to be interested. So, but
yeah,
the second movie had some really awesome combat scenes, especially like there's this one part to where, there's a ton of soldiers are riding on the back of worms and they're going in to fight. And it's like, man, this is, it was great. So I can't wait for the third one.
Yeah. I mean, I've been wanting to like just go and watch the first one and like to actually try and get through it. So maybe I'll do it like closer to, cause I assume this movie will be put on Max eventually.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. So
yeah, so I might just wait for it to go in there.
Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya, they have really good chemistry on screen.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So
are they love interests in the movie or no?
Yes.
Okay.
I thought so, but any hot sex scenes?
No.
I don't want to see Chalamet naked.
Well, no, I don't want to see him naked either, but I'll see Zendaya naked.
It's kind of like I don't remember the woman's name from Game of Thrones, but it's kind of a Jon Snow and then the fucking the red haired chick he was with. It's kind of like that situation.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, okay. Just the Red Witch. I don't remember what her name was.
Because they're both from like different kind of groups, and then they kind of come together, and then they fall in love, but then obviously things happen like they're with their romance. So
yeah. So I've been watching a new show with my friends that came out on Hulu, and I want to know if you guys have tried watching Shogun.
I have watched the first two episodes and was upset that there is no more until it released on a weekly fucking basis. Because that show is crazy.
The third episode's out. We just watched it last night.
Okay, sweet.
But Josh, you need to try and watch this show. It is so fucking good.
It's so interesting. Okay.
And it is, Alex, did you watch Game of Thrones or no?
No. But it reminds me a lot of like the whole premise of that, because I've never like watched it, but I understand the premise of like warring families over a faction of
yeah, land. Like this show is very Game of Thrones. It even has like an opening sequence, like a title, like video to where it's very like Game of Thrones, like the opening. And it is so good. I know a lot of it is in subtitles because they're speaking Japanese. And what's funny, Josh, is so it takes place in feudal Japan, I believe in the 1300s?
1600s.
And basically the ship of Englishmen go to Japan to fight the Japanese. That's what they call them.
Is that really what they call them, the Japanese?
Yes.
Well, yeah, because that might be what they called them back in the 1600s. I don't know. So they speak Portuguese, but whenever they're speaking that on a show, it's in English, but they say Portuguese. I don't know if they say that because they didn't want the whole show to be subtitled, or if it's just like a you just got to suspend your disbelief and just like know that when they're speaking English, they're actually speaking Portuguese.
But they also do speak Portuguese as well. There's actual Portuguese being spoken, and there's actual English that's being spoken. Because when Homeboy talks to that one guy on that small boat and they're having the conversation, that's in English, right?
I don't know, but when he's in a prison cell, though, when he's speaking to the old guy in there, the old guy's like, "Your Portuguese sounds weird," when he's speaking to him in English. And okay, it's like,
I need to pay attention to that, because maybe I didn't notice, but That's crazy. That's how it is, because that's such so interesting.
Yeah, because in the first episode, when the Japanese have a guy translate for him, they're like, he calls him up and he's clearly speaking English, but he's like, translate this Portuguese. And so they're speaking English, but they're calling it Portuguese in the show. Like I said, I don't know if it's because they thought it might be bad to have the whole show subtitled, which is a possibility. so they wanted some of it to be in English. I'm not sure. But it's very, the one guy in it, the English dude, Alex, he's very, he's like a Tom Hardy ripoff. Oh,
I love him. I love him.
He's so good, though. He's so good at his voice is just like a scruffy voice. And it's so good.
It is. And there's not even that much action going on. It's just like the story is so fucking intense.
Yeah. And Josh, the main Japanese guy in it, he's the guy that if you have any movie, any TV show where you have a Japanese character, he's the guy that you get.
Absolutely.
And you know who I'm fucking talking about.
Well, unless I see him, I don't know who you're talking about.
Let me vamp for a second, because I'm going to just real quick look up
his name. Okay, well, then I forgot to mention about Dune 2. Christopher Walken plays the Emperor in the movie. And but he's very subdued. He doesn't talk a whole lot. But man, I just wish they would let him go to where he'd be like, "These worms are coming at us."
Yeah. You know, oh yeah, I remember hearing that he was in it. Yeah.
Like, but the whole time he sit, like whenever they show him, he's normally he's sitting and he's kind of just like his head down. Like they just make him look really old and feeble. And so he just, and whenever he speaks, it's barely louder than a whisper. But man, I just wish you were like, you know, like these people on this planet are, you know, like,
yeah, that would be so fucking awesome.
Or like we need to beat them, and what we need is more cowbell.
Yeah.
And I know my Christopher Walken accent is awful, but
yeah. Here's a good picture of him. So yeah, this is the guy, Josh. Anytime you have anything Japanese guy, whatever, this is like the guy that you get.
Oh yeah, okay.
Dude,
and
the haircuts are fucking insane.
I can think of so many Japanese things that he's been in, that like he's always the guy with the samurai sword, always something.
Was he in Lost?
He was the last season, I think.
Okay. Yep. And I know, I'm trying to think of what else I've seen him in, but I can't.
Okay, so
I mean, I've seen he was in
some of the Japanese guy's hair is like wild as shit. Like it's got like this, they have like a ring of hair around the bike.
I know. Right? There's a specific name for that hairstyle. I don't remember is, but me and my friends have been making fun of it crazy whenever we see it.
Because it's just what's
his name here?
Oh, so weird.
Hiroyuki Sanada. But yeah, that's like a Friar Tuck haircut, Alex. Yeah. But yeah, I remember him from Lost. He was in a couple seasons of Westworld. He was in that movie that I've been trying to get Josh to watch that he hasn't watched yet, Bullet Train.
He's been acting since the 60s. He does not look that old.
Japanese people don't age like that. Like,
that's not a lot. That's crazy.
But yeah, this guy, he's so good at what he does. So, but yeah, so that's my show I've been watching lately. Also, started watching the new Deal or No Deal. because it's like a mix between Survivor and Deal or No Deal, and which is pretty funny.
That's where I remember him from, Andrew. He was in the newest Mortal Kombat, he's Scorpion.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's where I remember seeing
him. Yeah. But, alright, so you guys want to get some news?
Yeah.
All right, so it's been a couple of weeks since we convened for this podcast, and which means there's been 500,000 people laid off from the games industry. no, not that many. Close. Let's start with this one. PlayStation is cutting around 900 staff worldwide, about 8% of its entire workforce. This was not surprising when it happened. I'm not sure why everyone was acting like they were surprised, because we literally knew this was happening from the Insomniac leaks from last fall.
So I think there's people legitimately surprised, because there are people in the games industry, like on the journalism side, who legitimately refuse to read the Insomniac leaks. And so they had no idea that it was even in there.
I'm sorry, I cannot believe that at all. Like, I cannot believe that those people. I can believe that they refuse to write articles about whatever. But I refuse to believe that those people did not read what was in these Insomniac leaks.
Well, I mean, there's.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say there was people, you know, like on like Twitter expressing disbelief, and other people tweeting back saying it was in the Insomniac leaks, and then people going, I didn't read that because I don't you know, like I wasn't gonna read that. So,
and I'm sorry, I don't believe it. I think these people are having fake outrage, and like Alex, what are these people gonna do whenever like when Insomniac announces the X-Men game that they're working on, are these people honestly going to be like, holy shit, an X-Men game? I didn't know that. Are they really going to be like that? No.
Wait a minute. Insomniac's making another Spider-Man game? Yeah. Like,
what? I think some people will. I think some people will be like, holy shit, I didn't know they were going to do this.
I'm sorry. And people, everyone's going to call them out on it and be like, no, you guys are full of shit. Don't act like this is surprising when we learned about this 5 years ago or whatever. Like, yeah. It's stupid. And so obviously we didn't know specifically who was going to get laid off, but we knew from the Insomniac leaks that there was going to be about 8% of the Sony staff and a studio closure. It didn't say what studio, but that came true because London studio is being closed. And listen, I feel for all these people that are losing their jobs. I do. But as a company, you need to get your books right. And if you have studios that aren't producing, like London studio hasn't made a game of relevance in like 2 decades.
Well, yeah, isn't the London studio the one that's done most of the VR work?
They were doing VR. They made like SingStar like back in the day.
Yeah, they're just one of those. But the closure of like the Japanese studios and stuff that were making these smaller titles.
Yeah. But it just shows a big departure in Sony of like they don't care about these small titles anymore. They don't care about your concrete genies anymore. Like they don't want to make. You know, they're not going to put in $100 million in these small games, which, by the way, that what's crazy is that's about what it costs to make one of these small games now. It's about $100 million for Sony. They're not going to do that and only make $10 million. That is nothing to them. Like, that's not what they're in this for. They're in this to sell 10 million copies of the game and make... But even that's becoming untenable. Because you got Spider-Man 3 from the Insomniac leak is going to cost $350 million to make.
This entire thing is unsustainable. You can't just keep making $300 million games, because that's not enough. Because you're not
churning
out well enough to keep your company alive. So you can keep axing all these people all you want. You can keep stop making these games all you want. Eventually, you're going to have to pick one or the other. And if you keep only releasing... 5 games if you only release, you know, 3 games every 10 years, like,
yeah,
okay, they were worth how much to make and you made how much, like, it's unsustainable and it doesn't make any sense. And it kind of makes me a little annoyed because I mean, there's so many IPs that you can work with in the Sony catalog, in Microsoft's catalog, and they will make money. Are they going to make infinite amounts of money? No, but they're going to make a lot of it. It's just
dumb. If you look at Sony's last financial call, because obviously Jim Ryan is out at the end of this month, and they brought in Hiroki Totoki,
I love his name.
Yeah, he was the Sony CFO, so he's getting a demotion, and he's now PlayStation CEO. And basically, in the first financial call, he was telling everyone, this is ridiculous. These studios do not know how to regulate and, like, actually, like, spend money, like, spend money, like, in a good way, in a way that makes money for us. They basically burn money. And he was like, these studios don't have, like, good management. And he was saying that they're spending way too much fucking money, and it needs to stop. Because the margins that PlayStation was working on was 4%. That's it. They made 4% more than they spent. That is it. You cannot run a company on those margins.
No.
So pretty much he's basically telling everyone, like, guys, unfortunately, we have to lay people off now, but we have to change the way that we manage our studios so we're not spending $350 million and taking 7 years to make a fucking game. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's unsustainable, and it's just not working.
Yeah, I think things are going to start changing with Hiroki Totoki Literature Club running Sony now.
Oh God, I choked in my water.
That's a joke from Sacred Symbols. I can't.
Oh, I like that. That's really funny.
Yeah. but yeah. So they're gonna need to figure this out. Unfortunately, they had to lay people off, and continuing with the layoffs.
Can I put in something real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I think Hiroki Totoki is going to go in, and or he's going to have a team of people who's going to go to these studios, and they're going to be like, we need to start streamlining this shit, and we need to start cutting the fat. And I really hope that this leads to faster game development, because I'm sure that there's a lot of stuff going on with these game studios that are like, you guys don't need to be doing this. You guys are just wasting time and money. Get to making your game, stop with all this bullshit, and we need to start, like, just bat down the hatches and getting shit done.
Yeah, and coming from this is, obviously, London Studio was closed. The Twisted Metal game that was being worked on, canceled. It's done. It's axed. And we also learned that Twisted Metal game was still in pre-production. We've been hearing rumors about that for, like, 4 years. Now, I understand that it went from, I don't remember the studio that made, what was that driving game that came out on PS5, like, 2 years ago, Josh? You know what I'm talking about? That, like, battle, like, driving battle game.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it.
Fuck me.
Yeah, Destructive All-Stars.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Lucid Games. I think it was the one making that, if I remember correctly. They were supposed to be the ones making that Twisted Metal game. Sony took it away from them and said, no, no, no. After Destructive All-Stars, you guys aren't making shit for us anymore. So they gave it to... I don't remember who had it now. Anyway, whoever they gave it to, now they canceled it. They're like, done. We're not making this anymore. So there goes that. So this whole TV show now, which is actually really good...
Yeah.
Is no longer going to have a game anymore with it. Which is just stupid.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing with hearing about the Twisted Metal game for so long is... It reminds me a lot of the Fable game that's being made by Playground Games. Mm-hmm. Because, and I look this up, we started hearing about that game, about, like, rumors about it, in the middle of 2017. And it wasn't until December 2020 that Microsoft announced that the game was in development, but it was just starting development. So they spent 3.5 years on just pre-production before they even started development of it. And
yeah,
I really think that this is one of the biggest issues in games right now, mm-hmm. is in developing games, because It's like, look how long it took the Suicide Squad game to come out. It was like 9 years between...
how far behind the curve between,
it was like 9 years between titles that Rocksteady made. And it's like, I've never made a video game. I'm not part of the creative process. But I don't see why a game needs 3.5 years of pre-production before it starts going into development. Like, how much money did you just waste? How much time did you just waste? And I can see that this is a side effect of an industry that does not want to take risks.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. Like, we are in an industry right now that everyone is so afraid to take a risk on a new game, because it is getting to the point to where if you take a shot and you fail, you're done. You got your shot, you fucked up.
Yep.
I was going to say about the Fable thing is the only thing I can think of is that when we first heard about it in 2017, is that when that's when it got greenlit. And then, like, maybe it was pitched to Microsoft and they greenlit it. And then it was a new studio within Playground Games that was making that. So maybe they had like the, and it's a new, like, maybe they had to build a building, you know, get the team up, which does take time and years to do. So yeah. That's the only thing I can think of is that whenever we first heard about it, that's not like when they had like the whole team in there brainstorming ideas and stuff. I think that, so it took a few years to like get everything off the ground before they actually finally started making it. Which is still like, it's shitty that it just took so long for them to do it. I think another example of this could be the actual example of this is Perfect Dark.
Oh yeah.
That game was announced at Game Awards, I think in like 2020. Maybe even earlier, 2019 maybe. I don't remember. I'd have to look again. And it's been radio silent since. And all we've heard is that the team that was working on it was basically like pulled off and it was given to Crystal Dynamics. And that Crystal Dynamics came in to help with it, and then it was pretty much given to Crystal Dynamics after that. But they're making the new Tomb Raider game.
Yeah. And so, I think another big issue is that it just seems like executives at these studios, and I don't mean like the executives who actually come from video game development. I mean more like the suits who don't fucking know. Like, for example, Warner Brothers saying we're going to double down on games as a service. It's these executives who they don't understand what's going to work in the game industry. Like, how many executives looked at Helldivers and thought, it's going to come out, it'll do okay numbers for a little while, and then that's it?
It seems like every executive in Sony thought that.
And then how many executives now are going, what did we miss? Like, what questions did we not ask? Who did we not poll? What can we do next time? And it's like, how about you look at the fucking data that's in front of you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy. But continuing with the unfortunate layoff news, was that Electronic Arts also announced that they are laying off 5% of its staff, which was about 670 jobs. In addition to Andrew Wilson saying that they are straying away from licensed games because it costs too much money, and that they're now going to be relying on their in-house IPs, such as like Battlefield and their sports titles. However, they did say that they are continuing with the last... They said last, so I'm assuming it's the end of the trilogy in the last game in the Jedi game. So we had... what was the first one called?
Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, so we had Fallen Order, then we had Jedi Survivor last year, and then we'll have the next Jedi game in probably a few years. And then that'll probably be it. That might be the last Star Wars game. Because the only other Star Wars game they said they have in development is like some like tactics like Star Wars game. But this also came with the news that they were canceling Respawn's first-person Star Wars game that was in development that was rumored to be a Mandalorian-type first-person shooter game. So that is also no longer being developed, unfortunately.
And then to piggyback off the EA layoff story, I saw this today, and this is a story on GameSpot. So at a Morgan Stanley speaking event this week, EA CEO Andrew Wilson said that they're going to double down on their AI technology at EA. He said EA games are already using generative AI, adding that AI is something we are embracing deeply. He said big games take around 6 to 7 years to make, and EA's ambition is to make the game development process more efficient by taking advantage of AI. He said Wilson went on to say that EA has conducted a study across all of its development processes and found that 60% of development processes have a high feasibility of being positively impacted by generative AI. It did say, however, that he did not discuss or comment on how these plans could impact human jobs.
I honestly think that's a big nothing burger, because I think it's smart for these people to implement some form of AI. This doesn't mean it's AI to where it's like, oh, well, here we have an AI making this story or making the script, or we have an AI making the voices. This could just be like, when you're developing a world, you have AI helping you construct it or something like that, you know, because that would make it a lot faster if, you know, if they're using stuff like that. So I don't think this is all doom and gloom, which I'm sure some people are trying to make it out to be.
Sure. But also, like, if they were to do exactly what you just said, and it might not be that big of a deal, but someone at EA could go, well, we're using it to make these small little parts of the story. What if we had AI write the majority of the story, and then we can only have one writer instead of three?
I'm not even saying they're doing anything with the story. I'm saying that what it would be is like, if you have someone working on the geography of a huge map, and they have AI helping them make that, and it might, instead of taking a year to do that, if it takes them 6 months, then that's a positive. Like, I'm not, obviously there's bad parts of AI, I get that, but anyone who's like completely fuck AI for everything is stupid. Like, if AI can help you with some stuff, I don't see any problem with utilizing it. Where it gets into a problem is when you start trying to make AI replace art.
And that's what they're trying to do. That's eventually the end goal, is to pay less people to do the job and print out as much as you can. It's the whole point of AI. Like, So personally, AI art is the most ugly shit in the world, and it always looks like trash, and I don't think it's ever going to be good enough. Because I've seen all these other, like, there's a couple I've seen, like Sora or whatever. I think they all look like shit, and I don't think they're ever going to be good enough to replace people's actual talents. And I think this is going to be maybe a year or two of more of this art shit, but I don't think it's going to get good enough to replace it. But that's their goal. Every company's goal in the world is to never have to pay workers and to make as much money as possible. And that's why you see a lot of, like, labor jobs try to go to robotics, but, you know, there's always people that need to make the robotics. There's always going to be need people who have to, you know, watch the AI and fix the problems that they make. So it definitely can be used in game design, and it should be used, and I think it already has been for a while. But I think the part of the, you know, doing the art, I think that's so far away and so hard and difficult to do that I think that if a company ever tried to do it with just AI art, I think a lot of gamers would notice, and I think a lot of people would be pretty upset because it's not going to be that great.
I agree, and that's not what I'm saying. Right. What I'm saying is, like, if you have an environment artist,
right,
who makes all these environments, but then he tells an AI, okay, here's all the stuff I made. I want this here, I want this here, I want that there, mm-hmm, and it has the AI compile it, that's not AI art. An AI tool to help you assemble your art.
Yeah.
And if you can go from 10 environment artists down to 2 by doing that, sure, you're laying off 8 and you're not paying them to do that anymore. But wouldn't that be worth it to get it done faster? To get these games out faster?
If it's quality work, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
We're
like,
not at that point of AI being quality work enough yet. It's still in such a shitty phase that they're willing to roll this garbage out and still let people, you know, pay for it and use it and stuff, when I still don't even think it's worth even trying to do, really. But I mean, maybe it's just it depends on how it's and how it like how AI keeps developing over the years, and seeing if it gets better at making things look better, because I still don't think it's gonna happen. But it's possible. Isn't AI generative stuff already a thing in like Never mind.
You and I are both talking about different things here. Like, what I'm saying is it's just because there's a difference between a program, an AI program, that you say, like, hey, I want to see Sonic wearing a leather jacket with shooting a machine gun.
Sure.
And then this AI just goes and just makes that art. There's a
no shoes. Sonic can't have shoes.
Yes, no shoes at all. But
no. We gotta stop this shit right now.
there's a difference between that and saying, okay, I have a picture that I made of Sonic, a picture that I made of a shotgun, and a picture I made of a leather jacket, and telling an AI tool, assemble these three things. That is not AI art. That is just an AI tool that you use to form the art that you already made.
But when it's put into a program, it then becomes the AI's art I don't know, because I don't know enough about AI art to know.
It's just a tool that helps you get your job done faster.
Maybe, but it also can it depends. So I don't know if you plug stuff into a program, if it would be one-to-one of what you made, or it would be whatever the AI thinks it would make. Because a leather jacket can look different to the guy who made it and to the AI. So I don't know. I don't know enough about how that works to know anything about that, but
I'm not saying that this AI program would be making any of its own art. It would be all taking the art made by actual programmers and just assembling it how they tell it to, how they say they want it to be assembled to make the process quicker. Now, an example of this would be on Sigurd Symbols, Dustin one time, who's the producer of the show, said that he uses an AI a tool to help him make the thumbnails for Sigurd Symbols. Now, what he does is he has the thumbnail. It's not an AI-made thumbnail. It is like let's just go back hypothetically a Sonic picture. He has the Sonic picture, and then he also has maybe like a different picture of a hat. Now, he could go into a Photoshop thing himself and take 2 hours to meticulously place the hat exactly where he wants to on Sonic. Or he could use the AI tool to say, hey, this is the exact part of the picture where I want the hat to be, and the AI tool just does it in a finger snap. That's not AI art. That just takes a job that he was going to do and does it that much faster, so he doesn't have to spend the time doing the work. That's what I'm saying. That these game developers, like, maybe if they use AI tools, it can help them get the game done faster, but and they wouldn't need as many people making the game. So they would, in theory, be able to lay off 30% of the staff. I'm not saying that I would be happy if those people lost their jobs, but I'm saying it's something that the game industry is going to go through, because I think right now, there's unfortunately, especially after COVID, there are too many people in the games industry, and there are too many games being made.
I agree.
So the games industry,
they started making stuff that was at the time, the data they were seeing, and yes, they predicted it completely wrong. So yeah, exactly. I 100% agree.
And that's not the workers' fault.
It is absolutely not wrong.
That is the executive's fault for reading the tea leaves wrong.
Yep.
But the executives aren't the ones facing the consequences for it.
You guys really spun this off more than I thought you were going to. But the point I just wanted to make was, my biggest concern, especially with Andrew Wilson and like other CEOs, is who is going to keep them honest and make sure that they're looking at AI tools right now and not looking down the road and going with like this greedy look in their face. How can we have the bare minimum number of people making our games? How can we utilize these tools to not only now but in the future expand the technology to where it starts not making our employees, our developers' jobs easier, but actually replacing them entirely? I'm just worried who is going to keep these CEOs honest to make sure that they're not looking at this as a job replacer rather than something to make jobs easier.
I think, unfortunately, we have to hope that the gamers will keep them honest to where if a game releases where it's a lot of it is made with this AI stuff that you're talking about, that gamers would push back against that and say, we're not buying this. That's the only thing I think that we could hope for.
Yeah.
Yep.
But agreed. I don't know. So yeah, we already talked about Star Wars stuff canceled. But let's get into some other EA news here. And this has to do with the new Dragon Age Dreadwolf game. This is so this came out of Jeff Grubb's mouth. So speaking on his speaking on, what's that?
That just sounded so dirty, gross.
Came out. No, it would have sounded worse if you said this went into Jeff Grubb's mouth.
Yeah. So Jeff Grubb was speaking on his Game Mess podcast, Jeff Grubb said, "I suspect that Dragon Age Dreadwolf will probably pop up in the summer. I don't know when it'll be shown, but I assume it'll be shown sometime this summer." On the potential release window for the game, Grubb said, "It will be released this year, last I heard. EA is pretty confident about that. That doesn't mean it's a guarantee. It could slip, but right now, internally, they expect this game to release later this year." And he said that a full reveal of Dragon Age Dreadwolf is scheduled for this sometime this summer.
Can I just say that this is one of the things in gaming right now that I'm just the most just flabbergasted at is how just this game just isn't out yet, and and it's also one of those things where I'm like, they have talked about this game so much and they have just shown so little to where I would ask someone how would you have confidence in this game at all? Because all they do is they keep talking about, oh, this game is going to be great, and they don't show anything.
Yeah. Josh, do you know when Dragon Age 4 is when it was originally called, when that got announced?
Was it the Game Awards 2019?
2018.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So man, we're like, over, we're encroaching on 5.5 years of this game.
Yeah. So, yep. I mean, and it's one of those things where it's like, again, people are just they're just announcing games way too early, and I don't know, like your BioWare, like I don't think they would have needed to announce this game to like hire people, because I mean there's so many developers that are like, I want to work at BioWare, you know, and maybe they're in feature creep. Maybe this got feature creep to where they keep adding more shit and they just keep adding on the development cycle. I don't know, but
yeah, I would say that I think this game just took a lot longer, and it's possible this game got hit really hard by COVID.
Yeah,
like I think that they assumed that this game would have been out either last year or the year before or something like that. It's just taken them a lot longer to make it than it should have, and I think they also know that, like, guys, if we don't get this game right, this could be the end of BioWare.
Yeah.
Yep.
But we'll see. Let's see. Moving on here. Here's some more, I don't know if I'd say it's sad news. It's definitely news that pissed off a lot of developers. Grand Theft Auto 6 dev Rockstar, GTA 6 devs asked to return to the office full time for productivity and security reasons. So this is according to Bloomberg. Rockstar head of publishing Jen Colby told staff the company plans to end hybrid working for productivity and security reasons, saying it believes there are tangible benefits from in-person work. And they're all the workers are required to return full time to office. Sometime this month. I don't remember when they said this.
I think it was in April that they're supposed
to. Or maybe it was April.
Yeah, I think the I don't remember the specific date.
But yeah, all the from what I was reading, all the devs are very unhappy about this because they're only I think required that if you live in the area, you were only required to be in office 2 days a week. And if you lived outside of a certain radius, you were able to be fully remote. But now, until GTA 6 released, even the people that are out of the area are required to be in office 5 days a week. And well, they're not, and they're not allowed to work on the game outside of the office anymore.
Yeah. Let's get the perspective of the person here who actually works from home, which is me. And I will say that working from home has its pros and cons. One major con is that it is very isolating, and there's times to where sometimes I feel the walls closing in and I need to get out of my office to even if it's just go and let the dogs out or something. And but that's just the personal aspect of it. The professional aspect of it, I cannot imagine working on a group project from home, not being around people. I just can't.
Well, I think that in terms of the isolating stuff, I think you got to remember that these people, it's a different type of work from home, that they're constantly in communication with their team like mates, and they're constantly on Zoom calls, constantly doing stuff with their coworkers to where you're more isolated to where you're just calling mentally ill people. It's pretty much what you do.
But I will say the same, like I said, I can't imagine trying to collaborate and get a massive project the size of GTA 6 done from home. And obviously it's not one person doing everything. It's a massive group effort. But I think that really big, massive games, I think that they're probably developed better in studio with everyone around each other. And they're able to collaborate in person, bounce ideas off each other, bounce problems off each other, you know, troubleshoot, get stuff done. Maybe for smaller games, it's working from home could be more beneficial, or it could be the same like level of productivity as working in office. But I could absolutely see why executives at Rockstar would say we want people in office because they work better in office, but also like the security aspect, like GTA 6 already leaked.
I was going to say, let's be clear that this isn't, they're using the productivity so they can have a scapegoat for something else. This is truly just about, we don't want this game to leak again.
Yeah.
And it's coming up on the end and they don't want it to leak. And you got to also remember that this game is being developed in San Diego. So if you have people that live like 30 miles away, now you have to commute in San Diego and all that traffic to go to the office when you've been used to working from home for the past, what, 3-4 years?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's really shitty just to have like out of the blue this mandate of, sorry guys, now you guys have to come in the office.
And then the thing that sucks is that if these developers like, you know, I'm not going to do it, I quit, Rockstar tell them, all right, you can quit, but guess what? You're not going to get that fat bonus when GTA 6 comes out.
Yep. Yeah, they can hold that over their head. So,
sure. Yeah.
Sure. All right, Alex, anything to say?
No, I was going to say, how many more do we have left here? We should probably
just a couple more.
Okay.
One of the big ones, we already kind of talked about this, so I'll just go quickly through it, is that Warner Brothers reiterates that it plans on to increase its focus on free-to-play and live service games. And after a disappointing Suicide Squad release, which doesn't make sense to me because last year the Harry Potter game was the best-selling game of the year at 22 million copies. And now they had a live service game came out that failed, so they're going to steer more into live service and not single player games. I don't understand it.
I don't even think they fucking understand it.
Exactly. It's just another bad decision by executives. What was this one? This one's not much of a story. There was rumors that came out, I think, yesterday that Helldivers 2 studio Arrowhead was being acquired by Sony. Arrowhead has came out today and said that that is not true.
Yay.
So if they do end up being acquired by them, it seems like it will not be, not yet. So we'll see. A big thing that happened a few days ago was the Switch emulator lawsuit, to where Yuzu was agreed to pay $2.4 million to Nintendo, and they are shutting down Yuzu. And in another consequence of that was that Citra, that's what it's called, right, Josh? Citra?
Yes.
Citra is also forced to close down, which was the 3DS emulator. Obviously, these are still out there. You can still get these emulators. You just have to get them from somewhere else. And there are also new Switch emulators popping up, other than Yuzu. But this just kind of sucks that, you know, Nintendo sued them. They had a right to sue them. Obviously, as Nintendo, you have to enforce your trademark on stuff. And if you have a legal obligation to do that, and you see a way that you're going to win, then you have to do it. And that's what they did. Yuzu was stupid because they were charging for stuff that they shouldn't have been charging for. And that's what bit them in the ass.
Yep. So. The makers of Yuzu, it's a perfect example of a fuck around, find out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And last story, Sony announced the next PS PlayStation game coming to PC, which finally is Ghost of Tsushima.
Hell yeah, man.
And this actually might be a game that I double dip in.
Cool.
And buy it on PC, because all my friends are stoked to get it, so we could all play that co-op thing that they put out.
Yeah.
That DLC.
Dude, yeah, that'd be cool, man.
Yeah.
That was really fun. I love that.
By the way, I know none of you guys have an OLED screen.
No, unfortunately.
But I will say that
I have an OLED Vita.
Okay, out of any game I've played, because I have two OLED TVs now, I have a Switch OLED, and I have a tablet that's an OLED screen. Once you go OLED, I promise you, you literally cannot go back. And of any game that I've seen on an OLED screen, that made me a believer, even more than Breath of the Wild, which looked incredible on an OLED, was Ghost of Tsushima. It's breathtaking on an OLED. The colors, everything about it, just like anytime, they should honestly just have this game playing in any, like at all Best Buys, anything showing off an OLED, they should have Ghost of Tsushima playing on it. But yeah, this might be a game I double dip on.
That'd be cool.
For PC. So, almost 4 years old. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
But yeah, that is the last of the stories.
All right, do you guys have time to go through some anniversaries real quick and make ourselves feel old?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. This is not a milestone anniversary, but March 4th was the 7th anniversary of Switch. So
yeah,
we are now into year 8 of the Nintendo Switch.
And guess what, guys? There's a possibility we're gonna hit year 9.
Yep. All right, so going on to other milestone anniversaries. Let's see here. March 3rd was the 15th anniversary of Tom Clancy's Hawks. Did either of you ever play that?
No, but I remember seeing it a bunch.
Yeah, it was a 360 game, if memory.
And it was almost like an Ace Combat, kind of like Tom Clancy game.
Yeah.
But it was like helicopters, if I remember correctly. Mm. March 4th is the 25th anniversary of Pepsi Man on PS1. Never played it, but I've seen it.
I've never heard of that game.
Have you seen Pepsi Man before?
No, I don't think
Like the mascot?
No.
What?
Like the drink Pepsi?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen like the mascot before. I didn't
Get
know
the
they
fuck
made
out
so
of here.
Was this
no
like
fucking
a,
way.
Was this like a cool spot like promotional game? No.
You need to look him up. You know what this is. We've seen this before. Look it up right now.
Yeah. Yeah, like you've seen it before.
So we've seen the game before? That's what you're saying, huh?
No.
Well, you've seen the character before.
Just go look up Pepsi Man. You've seen this character before. It's so fucking bizarre.
But yeah, there's like a cool spot, kind of like promotional video game on PS1 for Pepsi Man.
But I mean, was it like, because Cool Spot was the like 7-Up promotional game.
But Pepsi Man, the gameplay was more like some of it was side scrolling.
I'm looking at it now, it's like third person.
Yeah. So
yeah, I've literally never seen this game before.
Okay. I've seen it in some YouTube videos where they talk about like the worst PS1 games ever.
Okay. I wonder how rare it is.
I don't know. All right. So March 5th is the 15th anniversary of Resident Evil 5.
Wow. I remember before that game came out, like looking up videos online, being so stoked about it.
Yeah. March 8th is the 5th anniversary of Devil May Cry 5. March 9th is the 20th anniversary of Metal Gear Solid, The Twin Snakes on GameCube.
Okay.
March 11th is Dark Souls 2 turns 10.
That was my first Souls game that I played, and also hands down objectively the worst Souls game out there. So
March 14th, Yoshi's New Island 3DS game turns 10. March 18th, The Legend of Zelda Four Swords Avengers turns 20. The same day, Katamari Damacy on PS2 turns 20.
Wow.
And then March, the same day, March 18th, Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes turns 10 years old.
Wow.
March 19th, Super Metroid turns 30.
Damn.
We're
having the 30th anniversary of which it was Super Metroid, is that what you said?
Yes.
And Nintendo's not doing anything for it.
Nope.
Okay.
And then, March 21st, this one makes me feel old, Pokemon Snap turns 25.
Wow.
March 23rd, Star Wars X-Wing Alliance on PC turns 25. The same day, the original Far Cry game turns 20. not that many big ones for the rest of the month. Yoshi's Crafted World and Nintendo Switch turns 5 on March 29th.
Damn.
And then there's a couple just March anniversaries because the actual release date isn't specified. The original XCOM game called XCOM UFO Defense turns 30. And then Daytona USA, the original arcade game, turns 30.
Get the fuck out of here.
So, damn. And that's all the anniversaries or major anniversary for March. And then looking in the next month, there's a...
Shouldn't be too many for April.
Not too many, but there's definitely some... definitely major ones,
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So. All right. Cool.
All right, and then...
Do you have a dad joke?
I do, but before I say the dad joke, is there anything else that you guys have for the podcast?
No.
I don't think so.
All right. All right, well, here is my dad joke. Guys... How do you make holy water?
I don't know.
You boil the hell out of it.
Hey, that one's not bad.
Okay, all right, I'll give you that one. That one was that one was actually really funny.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, boys, anything else?
Nope, that's it for me.
All right.
That's it for me.
All right, boys, and I will talk to you later.
All right, later.
Yep. Later. Peace.